is number 12, Grace Harbor Salmon Management. This is a briefing and a public hearing. Ron Warren, our Region 6 Fish Program Manager, will do the presentation.
Here today to talk to you about a very important issue to us in the department and in Region 6, salmon management in Grace Harbor. The purpose of today's presentation is to provide an overview of the Grace Harbor salmon and fisheries that occur within Grace Harbor and its tributaries, as well as share with you some work that we have done to establish concepts for a policy and seek sideboards on some of the sharing principles for that, if appropriate. The presentation outline, we have information on Grace Harbor salmon, the multiple species that we have in Grace Harbor. We'll provide a look into the recent history of Grace Harbor fisheries, our policy development schedule that we're in the midst of, key policy issues that have been discussed with stakeholders and the public, and finally, the sharing sideboards that have been developed working with stakeholders and our advisory committee for Grace Harbor. Chehalis Basin Spring Chinook in the Chehalis River itself spawn relatively high in the basin in the Skookumchuck and Whatcom Rivers, and you can see the goal there in the red line. We've worked to keep the slides consistent so they'll be easy to follow, but the red line is the escapement goal, in this case 1,400 fish. And then the natural spawning population that is counted and estimated that occurs in the years 2000 to 2012. And this is for all species. It's to give you an idea about just a short-term trend analysis of what's going on in the populations.
Ron?
Yes, ma'am.
Are these wild fish that you're...
Yes, they are.
They're all wild fish.
Yes.
We're not talking about hatchery fish.
We don't have a hatchery program on Spring Chinook in the basin.
Okay.
And as we transition to Fall Chinook and some of the remaining stocks, you'll see that what we try to do is, again, the escapement goal in the red line, the blue line of natural spawners, and then the bottom bars of green are to try to show you, in the comparison of returns, the actual returns to hatchery rack. So where we have Fall Chinook programs in the Chehalis, what those hatchery rack returns are and have been over the same periods of time. For hump tulips, Fall Chinook, again, the same look. I'll go back. The escapement goal in the Chehalis system is 12,364, and most of the Fall Chinook occur on a brood stocking basis, just so you know. We have worked to try to shift that into a facility so we have better water attraction and trapping capabilities, but has historically been on the backs of a lot of good volunteer work that occurs in the Satsup and in the other areas of the Chehalis. So in the Hump Tulips River, the goal here...
Ron?
Yes.
On that last slide you were showing, would you like the gray mark to be up to the red mark, or your gray, your hatchery rack?
No, sir. This is just to indicate how many fish are utilized or returned to a hatchery or utilized in the taking of the next generation of hatchery population. So in most cases, we're trying to take 600,000 fall Chinook eggs within the Chehalis. That's the size of the program. And so you only need the number of those adults that require to take that. So normal fecundity for a female is 4,500. I don't have those numbers written down, but no, the bottom bars are only indications of what actually returns to the hatchery and are utilized for egg-taking purposes, or as you'll see later in other species, may be in excess of the needs of the facility.
Just to make sure, because our Commissioner Holtzmiller is from the Assotin southeast corner of the state, so he's not familiar with a lot of our fishery concepts. Escapement has to do with the number of returns of wild fish on the spawning grounds, so that's the target.
Just in his next one, he showed the gray or the gray up to the red, and that's why I questioned this one.
So in this particular case, very few adults return and are needed for the egg take goals that return to the actual hatchery rack or are brood stocked. In this particular case, the program currently is about 550,000, but we have these represent fish that are incorporated or used in the egg-taking process at the facility, but also show what don't actually indicate the level of, but show how many fish are returning. These fish are also feeding fisheries, and you'll note that the blue line is indicated by natural spawners. We are still trying to comply with the hatchery and fisheries reform policy and broodstock management in these systems, so that not every spawner is a wild spawner. There is a mix of hatchery and wild that we are trying to manage. That answer your question? Thank you. So for Chehalis coho, the goal here is 28,506. Our program within the basin is 1.6 million coho. Just in quick thought, that many fish returning from a hatchery rack perspective versus the number of wild fish, we rarely have the percentage of fish that are needed to conduct a marked selective fishery. So, and many of these fish do escape the fishery and return to hatchery rack. You can see in some years we've had in excess of 40,000 and right at 40,000 fish in return to the facility, where only a few thousand are actually required. But I guess we're focusing a lot on hatchery, and you'd like to see that at least in the recent few years we've easily escaped enough fish on the spawning grounds for the propagation of the population. So for the Hump Tulips coho, this is one of the facilities that has had extreme surpluses to the facility. We don't have much time to harvest them once they re-enter the marine area in Grace Harbor or in river, and have also struggled a bit with the natural spawning population achieving its goal. The goal there is 6894. And that's a basin-wide aggregate escapement goal of 35,400 for coho. And 14,600 for Chinook. Chum, a little bit different scenario. Very, very small programs in system. Again, the small bars reflect total returns coming from those hatchery programs. And you can see by the trend line, it's been spotty achieving escapement with chum. The goal for chum, we don't have a breakout for Chehalis and hump tulips. Our escapement goal is 21,000 for the basin. So Grace Harbor Fisheries think it's a fairly complex system to manage within. We have the Quinault Indian Nation, and we have to manage and build our relationships with them on the terms and obligations of U.S. v. Washington. And then in subsequent U.S. v. Washington proceedings, it was identified and that the catches from the Chehalis tribe or the Confederated Tribes of the Chehalis Reservation were to come from the non-treaty share. And so that for the second, third, and fourth bullets, those are all non-treaty fisheries, two of which, the WDF&W managed commercial fishery and the recreational fishery, obviously our constituents, many of which are here today, or some of which are here today. Also, these two other pieces come off the top as we begin to set our harvestable surplus for the seasons as we enter into our management timelines and processes. So over time, starting back in 2005, initiated by a relatively large public meeting, I believe we had 120 or so folks show up to talk about how do we develop a Grays Harbor management plan that focuses on conservation but also allows some predictability in fisheries based on abundances. And as we developed that, we built what's called a tier system that I'll talk about in just a little bit and that you may hear a lot about. But the management plan and the use of that has provided us guidance that was developed with our advisors. Many of our advisors have been with us for better than a decade. Although we have some new, fresh faces, they've come up to speed really quickly and have provided a lot of good recommendations and a lot of assistance to the department. The management plan and tiering system provides for, I'll say, a priority of recreational fisheries at catch or opportunity at the lower abundances of species, and then the opportunity as the abundance increases shifts to a parity within the tier system later in the higher abundance thresholds for the commercial fishery. And so, again, just to recap, the tiering system, although we're not going to get into a lot of specifics here because it's, I think, more information than we actually have time for, is something that we refer to that over time I think we've done a fair job. I won't say great or good, but a fair job in describing what it is and how we've applied it to the public, although our public processes of late have really given us some great creative ideas on how better to describe and go through the processes. So moving into fisheries, this is a look at total catches from 2000 to 2012. This is treaty and non-treaty. You can see that the catches of spring chinook are relatively low. I can tell you that there is a fine line there from the Quinault Indian Nation for spring chinook, but that fine line is incidental impacts have been less than 12 fish, I believe, landed in this time period. That's the time frame that they're actually fishing for sturgeon and do have a small impact on spring chinook. The spring Chinook for the non-treaty fishery in this particular case is any reported landings from the Chehalis tribe, as well as our freshwater fishery that has happened periodically throughout the same time frame. And you can see that the fall Chinook, breakdowns of fall Chinook and coho are most abundant fish being caught in recent years, both by the Quinault Indian Nation and the non-treaty harvests that we'll see a little bit of a breakdown later. And then chum. You can also see the either the equity or the imbalance of those catches and how they've been apportioned.
Ron, before you go on, can you explain why this is not a 50-50 picture?
A 50-50 picture of each of the species. I think it shows a fairly close for Chinook. We have different. One of the many complexities of Grace Harbor is that we have challenges in the management between the Quinault Nation and the department. The Quinault Nation manages based on an aggregate. Escapement goals, and even though they keep an eye on Chehalis and hump tulips, as long as they meet that or are close to that on an aggregate basis, where we look at each of those individual spawning escapement goals and plan our fisheries to stay within them in each of the basins. So we project to under-harvest because we don't want to exceed that lower baseline of harvest allowable so that we still achieve the escapement goal. We are continuing to work with the Quinault Nation. Think that we're on a road to have some really good discussions about possibly changing those to basin escapements, and it's certainly our hope to do that. We think that it will add commonality in both parties' fisheries and how they set them and allow us some more conservative fisheries.
Okay. I have other questions, but we are going to have months of discussion, so I'll reserve those to dive into the real details.
Okay. So for Chinook, you can see that what we tried to do here is this is all non-treaty and break up a marine and freshwater WDF and W managed commercial and a Chehalis tribal piece. Again, as I spoke to on the first slide that looked at treaty non-treaty, this is a freshwater fishery, has been a historic freshwater fishery for us in at least the recent years that we looked at. And this is the reported catch from the Chehalis tribe as well as our recreational catch in river. For the fall Chinook, you can see that many more fish are caught. You can see the relative catches by commercial and freshwater and marine sectors in this particular slide. And what we're trying to do here is just show you some relative abundance and how important the fisheries are to the sectors in recent past. For Grays Harbor Coho, also the scale slide, this scale on the left was 1 to 7,000 or 0 to 7,000, and when we go to Coho, it's 0 to 30,000. So a great deal more fish landed or reported being harvested for Coho in system than in fall Chinook. Not surprising with the escapement goals that we went over earlier. And then the same graphic for chum, very small pieces of recreational opportunity, but you can see the and small pieces of that harvest by the Chehalis. And most of that harvest has occurred by our WDF&W managed commercial fishery. So then this is just a quick snapshot of the recent years of Grays Harbor commercial ex vessel values. These values are nominalized to real 2013 dollars. I will say that in this period, or at least for the last 10 years, we've seen a slight decline in active licenses that land within Grays Harbor, range in that 10-year period, or the most recent 10-year period, is low 20s to low 30s in total licenses landing in Grays Harbor in a given year. So the schedule we're on, Director Anderson in his director's report in October informed or talked to the commission about the department having a desire to develop and bring to you a Grays Harbor salmon policy. This is the first formal introduction of that or since that time. We are here today to show our initial policy and seek any comments or guidance that you have on the sideboards that we've developed through our stakeholder and advisor process. In December, we'll be back to talk about that draft and seek approval to release that for public comment, which will give the public 30 days to comment back to us. In January, we would come back and summarize what we've heard. I'll step back to December. We'll also have public comment at the December meeting on the issue as we will be refining the policy concepts that were handed out to all of you in your notebooks as well as to the general public today. And then in January, we'll come back and we'll talk specifically about those concepts at that time, get into what it really says, how it may be interpreted and applied within Grays Harbor, and seek additional direction from the commission on that policy. And then in February, hopefully bring that policy back to you for final decision and consideration. So what's not shown on the slide is that to date we've had three meetings, two of which were advisory committee meetings followed by some public input and one public workshop. We plan to have that same series of meetings after today between now and when we come back to you in December. We are preparing ourselves for the rolling up and how to present and take comment from the public. In the open public comment, we've established an email site for Grays Harbor. It's actually graysharbor@dfw.wa.gov, so people can provide us comments. And then in between the January and February meeting, we will have one advisor slash open public comment meeting and one public workshop prior to bringing the policy back to you for final consideration in February. Along the way through the work with our stakeholders and advisors, we've heard some very consistent messages about views of changes or emphasis that need to be placed on management of salmon within Grays Harbor, and probably the most consistent of those messages is conservation. We've also, as I spoke earlier, have had some great ideas by folks on transparency, communication techniques, maybe some ideas about how to share this with through other media outlets and our website. But I think that that's important enough to be stated in the policy. I've heard a lot about technical rigor, the tools that we use to predict forecasts and to plan fisheries. And we hope to also address that in this policy, as well as the next two issues of monitoring and enforcement, as well as some in-season management. And then lastly, the probably the most frequently spoken is how we share the resources between our constituents. So I'm going to take a fair minute, about a time, to show you this first slide. I think that it will benefit us later. So what we're going to step through is the same species, Chehalis and hump tulips, Chinook, the two stalks of coho, and then the chum. And in that, we'll show you that what our average or between 2009 and 12, our last modified, our last modification to the tiering system was done in 2009. That's why we chose that as a break period. We actually split it up from an aggregate tier to a basin tier. So we have a tier 4 hump tulips and a tier 4 Chehalis. And so we show on Chehalis what the percentage is, the average percentage is. And then all of this was done not in any scientific basis, but in those who could give us their time and willing to give us their input at the advisory meetings, the public there, and then the public workshop on how the sharing should be done. So in option A, can see that that is all recreational input. We asked for that from our advisors, the folks representing the recreational community or themselves as recreational folks, filled out only the recreational splits. And then subsequently the commercial, we had them do the same thing. To reemphasize the complexity of the management of Grace Harbor is the 50% that goes to Quinault of the harvestable surplus, and the, in this case for Fall Chinook, 8.25% that go to the Chehalis tribe. That is a state calculated, that has never been finalized in court. That is just a calculation that's used based on fish that originate above the reservation. And then input received from the recreational community on small run sizes. And we did this to try to take away the complication of the tiering system. And so to give so many broad ranges depending on abundance, we tried to break it down and simplify this a little bit in hopes that it would help us try to look at what was actually occurring. So for recreational, the recreational said in a small run size, and I deem small as I would equate that back to something that's 10% above escapement goal for our share, 618 fish or so. It probably doesn't equate to something that is harvestable, but there are impacts there that allow fishing in catch and release or selective towards hatchery, depending on ratios and how they make sense. And then in large run sizes, those would be in a higher tier, and I just picked the top tier in what we ranged in my thought process anyway, so fish greater than 5,000 on, and those numbers, by the way, are state shares, but just in my own mind, I wanted to have something ready in case you wanted to know what that meant. So you can see that the recreational folks said that they'd like 40% in a small run. As the run increased, and as we calculated what they were saying into common numbers, 30%, leaving on a small run 1.75% to the commercial, and then on a larger perspective, 11.75 for the commercial on a larger. And then the commercial showing what they had asked for in small and large run sizes and the remainder for the commercial share based on what they said. So we just back calculated what they offered. So before I go on, I'm going to pause just a moment to see if I've lost everyone or just a couple of you. So if you have any questions, I'd really like, before I go on, to make sure that you understand the slide and what we're trying to present.
Thank you. The Fish Committee did look at this before, so most of us, I think, who had the opportunity to go over this previously understand what you did here, and it all makes sense. But those of you who are lost, speak up. Commissioner Caney, you look lost.
I'm not saying I'm totally lost, but thank you, Madam Chair. When we look at these numbers, and it's always, you know, one user number recommendation, recreation versus another commercial, and somehow I have to put context to that. So I heard a number back earlier in your report, I think it was 20 to 30 commercial licenses. I just want to be clear about how many commercial licenses are being put to use in this whole watershed, in this whole Grays Harbor, so I can make more sense of these numbers.
So I really want to be careful and emphasize that when I give you the number, it's those that licenses that the state sells to state commercial licensed fishers. So I believe, so our commercial licenses are sold as Grays Harbor Columbia River. So we have, I believe, 60 Grays Harbor Columbia River licenses that are sold. Some of those are suspended each year, but those that land fish in Grays Harbor, that range has been between 20 and 30 over the last decade. Licenses landing fish within the variety of fisheries that we've been able to offer.
Thank you.
Dr. Henderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Ron, I want to make sure, of course, we've talked a lot about the presentation and what's gone on up to this point in time, but the process up to this point in time, part of that process has included an expression by the recreational sector of what their perspective is in terms of how the non-treaty share, setting aside the Chehalis tribe, should be allocated between the recreational and our commercial sectors. And both sectors have provided input to you, which is reflected on this slide, and they have offered that same perspective as you go through the additional species that we'll be looking at. Somewhere along, I think in 2007, we worked through a process and have this tiered approach that's an abundance-based allocation regime. And if I were to if the recreational perspective is here and the commercial perspective is here, the tiered approach that we have been using since, I think, 2007, I could be wrong on that, where does it fall within? So if these are if you're representing these as the sideboards that you would work within, that you're proposing you would work within, given the input that you've received up to this point in time in the process, where does our last 5 years or so fall in between those two sideboards if I were to overlay the status quo?
So you're right. Our first year that we used the tier actually was 2006. We modified it in 2009. So what we have at the top of the slide is the average of that 2009 use through 2012, and that's been 22%. So it actually falls somewhere in between what we've been given thus far. And it's hard because in such a short set of years to look at, we've haven't had a great deal of diversity in run sizes, things like that, so we've struggled. Say we've had very abundant coho years the last in this year period, and relatively small abundances of Chinook. So they've all stayed relatively close to that. It probably would have been a wider range or a better indication of more numbers if that diversity of return would have been greater. But yes, it does fall between the two parameters that we have. What we've used falls in between that.
And so as the commissioners are thinking about this, as you're walking through the presentation and they're hearing from members of the public, understanding that we're at the start of this process from a commission perspective, you're laying out here today kind of what we're referring to as these sideboards. In other words, absent input from the commission to the contrary, we wouldn't be looking at allocations that were outside these sideboards as we go through the remainder of our process. Not necessarily, so we're going to be coming back in December, and after having some additional meetings with our constituents, and at that point in time we'll have the policy document kind of squared away, and we'll spend some more time on that, and from that point then we would, providing the commission agrees, we would put it out for public review and continue through our process. So I just wanted to make sure that the commissioners have a sense of what we're asking of you today, after you hear the input from everyone, and I can return back to this conversation when we get to that point in your agenda. So,
yeah, and we want to be cooperative in this design of our involvement, and I can tell a lot of us have detailed questions that are coming to mind. Commissioner Kehoe just whispered to me that he has a whole bunch of questions, but he wants to defer them. So we have to go about this, get the big picture first, and then we'll start digging deeper and figure out how we give you feedback over the period of the next several months. So we're bursting with questions, but keep going.
Okay. Thank you. So turning to hump tulips, all the hump tulips, Coho and Chinook, will only show the Quinault as that is a northern tributary to Grace Harbor and doesn't have Chehalis tribal implications. So again, the input from the recreational community on their fishery and the resulting impact, or what that translated to the commercial, and likewise the commercial input and the resulting remainder for the recreational within the 50% sharing that occurs on this. You can see that in these 4 years we've had a relatively large abundance. I believe that what we call Tier 4 Chinook has been achieved each of the years within this data set, which doesn't give us, again, a lot of flexibility or a real long average, but we've had some very nice Chinook fisheries or opportunities there for both recreational and commercial in the recent years. For Coho, again, we add back in the Chehalis piece, but then you can see the sideboards between small and large runs for recreational, and how either you can look at it either from what the recreational said about themselves versus what the resulting commercial comment said about the recreational. You can crisscross back and forth. Again, our average 09 through 12, 34%. For hump tulips, Coho, again, a pretty dramatic difference depending on which crisscross you look at, between the input that we receive from stakeholders and advisors, and our average of 42%. So again, fall within the ranges of the extreme sideboards that the public and advisors supplied us. For Chum, it's a little bit more difficult, as we did not have a tier system structured for Chum, and we're hoping to construct that. But we believe that if this is a format or an applicable way for the commission to view this and possibly give us feedback, that we can assign run size values or share values based in our tier system to develop that and allow this the sideboards to run as we develop that with input from, again, the stakeholders and advisory group. So then, in addition to the input that we got from the public, we'd actually asked our advisors, so a pretty small subset. We compared this against totals from what we got with the public, but just the freshwater piece. So if you look at the small run size, the remaining portions, this is all recreational for freshwater and marine sharing based on input that was received. So if the freshwater sharing 73, pretty easy to 27% would be remain for the marine fishery. And so instead of complicate putting it all up there, we just showed one. Again, for trying to stay consistent, the small and large run, look at the range of sideboards, and then Chinook within Chehalis Hump Tulips, and Coho with the same, and then Chum. But again, this is what the recreational folks have told us how they would like to see their based on their input, how they would split that between the marine environment and the freshwater fisheries. So this is the time for questions. I wish I could have, through mental telepathy, deleted that word, but I can't. Then after we have or after I or others have done the best of answering questions for commissioners, we do have a panelist from our advisory committee that are here to speak to the commission and answer any questions that you might have for them. We also have more folks that would provide public input on this, and then we would seek any guidance that you have on the sideboards of sharing for us as we go back to the public, have three more meetings, and bring a refined document back to you in December.
Okay. Director Anderson, do you want to say something?
I want the commission to be aware of the significant impact that northern fisheries have on Grace Harbor stocks. And just if you go back, and you can look back at a data set from 1985 through 2001 and look at coated wire tag recoveries of Grace Harbor origin Chinook. And pretty close to 50% of those coated wire tag recoveries are in Alaska and Canada. So when we have a relatively far north migrating stock like this, and we sometimes tend to forget what a significant impact those northern fisheries have on this stock before they ever get back to Washington waters. If we could put up a fence at the U.S.-Canada border, that'd be great. I haven't figured out a way to do that. So the the Pacific Salmon Commission, the management of those aggregate abundance-based fisheries, the AABM fisheries, are very important in terms of returning those, getting those fish back into Washington waters. And I did have a question for Ron that I know he can answer. So I think it's a softball kind of pitch, slow. In terms of the Pacific Salmon Commission and the spawning escapement goal for Grace Harbor Chinook, can you tell me the status of that?
Boy, I hope so. No, the current status is that since 2007, the Pacific Salmon Commission, more specifically the Chinook Technical Committee of that, has asked us to develop a biologically based escapement goal for Chinook within Grace Harbor. And the Quinault Nation took a run at that back in 07, and that has been further refined. They have offered their work to us. We're currently in review and hope to continue to meet with them, discuss differences of that internally to be able to make policy decisions, and then jointly take that back for review and possible adoption by the CTC and then the commission itself into management for the Pacific Salmon Treaty Management Area.
Thanks. I wanted the commission to be aware that that is that separate international process. And when Ron references develop a biologically based escapement goal, I mean, that would, why don't you, if you could just clarify, I mean, that would suggest that what we have isn't a biologically based.
Correct.
Escapement goal.
Our current escapement goal is based on area of habitat. It isn't a commonly used methodology, and the CTC has asked us to look at the different methodology and convert it to this biologically based method. That has been coast-wide acceptance by broad peers, let's say.
Okay, thanks.
So am I to understand that the Quinault tribe adheres to the internationally set escapement figures?
Currently, the Quinault Nation and the department both understand that through the Pacific Salmon Commission and through what we have in the Pacific Management Council management plan is an aggregated abundance that's documented. If we were to move forward, part of our discussions with the Quinault Nation would be to seek independent escapement goals, but we have a ways to go before I could optimistically say that that's going to get done, but it's certainly our preference to have those individual escapement goals, and they're willing to have those discussions. We do know that.
For the Chehalis and the Hum-Tulip,
yes, ma'am.
Okay.
But,
Dr. Anderson?
But as of this moment, we don't have an escapement goal for Grace Harbor Chinook that's been agreed to by the Chinook Technical Committee of the Pacific Salmon Commission, aggregate or not. And we have an aggregate escapement goal that is in the Salmon Management Plan of the Pacific Fishery Management Council, the 14-6.
Yes.
We have been working with Quinault Nation in particular in terms of establishing, and we have escapement goals that are specific to the Chehalis as well as Hump Tulips. But the point is, I wanted to make sure you were aware of the international connotation of not having an escapement goal that's been blessed by the Pacific Salmon Commission. We have an aggregate escapement goal under the Pacific Fishery Management Council. And there is a, I would say, a pretty significant push from the Quinault Indian Nation to get this biologically based escapement goal put in front of the Chinook Technical Committee and get it approved through that process. So I wanted you to be, and everyone, aware of that activity.
Okay. Well, I had a suggestion about how we proceed. I like the idea of questions. You may want to telepathically remove that.
No,
however, it might be better for us in shaping the questions that we want to ask, since we don't want to ask absolutely everything about the smaller or the more detailed sides of this. Maybe we should wait until after we hear from the panel and the public, and then I would like you to come back to the front table.
Be happy to.
And then we can have this conversation and maybe give you some feedback.
Fantastic.
Sound good?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the panel. Do you want to introduce them, Ron? Or?
I would. We had four folks lined up from our advisory committee. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, Andy Mitby can't make it today because it happens that fishing is very good in Willapaw, as I've heard Grace Harbor picked up yesterday as well. So he will not be in attendance. One of our longstanding commercial advisors, Alan Hollingsworth, is here, as well as two of our recreational advisors, nicknamed Doc, but Francis Estalila has been on our Willapaw and Grace Harbor Advisory Committee for, 11 years now, and has just been steadfast in participation and sharing thoughts and making quality recommendations to the department. A new member this year, Dave Hamilton. I've had the pleasure of knowing Dave for 20 or 25 years or maybe more, as he's participated in many forums within the Chehalis Basin, the Chehalis Basin Fisheries Task Force, and the RFEG, ran the RFEG for a decade or more, I believe. But all three of those folks are here to give you their insight on management as it's occurred and answer any questions that the commission might have for them.
Great. You three want to come forward? I'm not going to read you the three-minute rule because this is a little bit unusual practice, bringing citizens up to represent other citizens rather than just themselves. But so be considerate of the fact that we've got plenty of people who want to give us their views, too, after you've finished your remarks. So, but welcome. Thank you for coming. We're very interested in what you have to say. Mr. Hamilton, do you want to start?
Oh.
Oh.
I don't know if that's fortunate or unfortunate. Thank you for the time, Chair Wecker and the commission. One thing that I just heard a few minutes ago was about the sideboards and the percentages and stuff that you've seen. That was, if we go out of here today, this is what you're going to utilize, and I would urge you to reject that. Nobody, including advisors, has seen this before this morning, and I can tell you several of them would have a very strong opposition to what they see, both on the commercial and the rec side, let alone the conservation side. So I believe this is an excellent starting point. I applaud it, but it is nowhere near where it needs to be, in my personal opinion. I believe many others would feel the same way. So it needs to be regarded only as a starting point going forward, not as firm sideboards, okay? There's two issues I'd like to bring up. One is, conservation is always said to be the most important thing, and in the end, it gets tossed in the garbage bin more often than not, especially within the Chehalis system. I personally feel a better way, just for a starting point, is after running about 20 plans up the flagpole and getting shot to pieces by friends and the fish people, is that what we need in Chehalis is a simple conservation policy. It's easily understood. And it's simply this. Commercial fisheries, regardless of who they are. 4 consecutive days a week in any calendar week, and that's it. 3 for the gravel, 4 for harvest. Okay? Anything else, the pressures of politics and the management plan, which is all about who kills what, when, where, it'll all just start undermining conservation every time. It's human nature. It is the way that the beast runs. And so there needs to be absolute baselines put in that agency staff and other and citizens, they aren't violated. They're rock solid. It ends the discussion. They need to be that solid. Okay, on the other item, real quick, is the model. The model needs to reflect reality. In recent years, it has not been close to accurate of what it says. Dr. Estelia can probably give you a firmer rundown of numbers, if he wishes. And within the model, there has to be honesty about that. But not only that, is the use of selective fisheries. Those selective fisheries need to have protocols, whether it be rec or commercial, that are identified, they're clearly laid out, and adhered to. Currently, we have selective fishing in the commercial side in Chehalis. And if you watch the training films and everything else that goes with it, then you look at what happens. It says selective fishing in name only, and that's all that exists. There is the actual use of it as designed by the science people in Columbia and then Ashbrook and the Willapa. They just like drop them off, stick the name off, and just run. And that's not a good practice. That's just totally intellectually dishonest, as Francis would tell you. But more importantly, it creates an atmosphere where adherence to principle just leaves. It's about killing fish. Okay, and it was so within the model, it has to be relevant, it has to be honest, and it has to apply both rec and commercial, and just no more smoke, mirrors, and games. And right now, smoke, mirrors, and games has dominated Grace Harbor for the last 7 years. That's about it.
Thank you. Mr. Hollingsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This puts me way out of my comfort zone. And Chairman members and Director Anderson, I have fished Grace Harbor for 44 years, gill netting. Started in 68. I sold my boat last fall, and I haven't fished this year. I do have my licenses. A brief history of Grace Harbor gill net industry. When I started, we had 125 members in the association that fished in Grace Harbor. We had a summer dip-in fishery that fished from the 5th of July till the 15th of August. The Chinook period was about a month long, 3 days a week. The Coho period was about 6 weeks long. We fished 5 days a week. Some years we got 7 days because of larger runs of Coho. And then we went 3 days a week for 3 weeks for Chinook, and then 5 days a week till the in November and a week into December. And that was our old fisheries when I first started. The Bolt decision come along. We went to a couple days a week with no directed Chinook fishery. And we really haven't had a directed Chinook fishery in the Chehalis for many, many years. In the early 90s, the recreational marine area fishery took off, and that really hammered the commercials. They took some of the in-river sports, catch a Chinook, and they took most of the Chinook that the commercials would have had. So we went way, way down. We do not have the summer dip-in fishery. We lost that around 91 or 92. Okay. Now, then that's kind of the history of what I can remember. After the commission adopted the North Falcon policy about 10 years ago to include both recreational and commercial fisheries in Grays Harbor, we got a little more time. Before that, we was only getting a day or two here and there, basically to harvest some chum and a few coho. In the last 10 years, except for 1 year, we've had non-retention of Chinook in the Chehalis fishery. We did have some directed fisheries for Chinook in the Hump Tulip system. Now, then, some items that I see that needs to be on the policy. First one, escapement goals, most important. Second, set seasons on sound biological and scientific data, not public opinion. If we use a tier system, we need a tier for Chinook every 500 Chinook and 1,000 coho if in the tiers, so that we can identify the percentage that each fishery gets within each tier. So we might have 10 or 12 tiers instead of 4, I think we have now. Keep the Hump Tulips and Chehalis system separated so we can have fisheries in each area. We need to better identify which fish is caught where. Right now, the department claims when the commercial fishery has a fishery for Chinook in the Hump Tulips, which is way over in the corner of the bay, that we're catching way more Chinook from the Chehalis system than the commercials think there is. We need to better identify how many Chinook is caught in which areas from other river systems. There may be a possibility of limiting the recreational fisheries to less than 7 days a week, especially in the marine area, if it looks, that's one way to keep them over harvesting like they did this year, because they had to shut them down. So maybe shorter directed Chinook fisheries in the recreational system. And we need to define what the process is for in-season adjustments of whether the run looks like a slower or bigger to adjust fishing time for each group. And I have some observations from the last few years. I've been a recreational fisherman for many, many years. And when I go out during the week, I see mostly retired people fishing. Very few of the average working man fishing during the week. The average retired guy, I don't know, he seems like he wants all the fish, it looks to me like. He wants to catch his limit every day. Another item I've seen, the hatchery production of coho has moved the run up at least 2 weeks. Before, very seldom would you catch any coho before the 20th of September in the Chehalis system. Now then, they're there almost 2 weeks earlier than that. Maybe something needs to be done because the hatchery coho run is overlapping the wild Chinook run till it's hard to not catch Chinook when you want to catch coho. Most of the commercial fishers that I know that fish Grays Harbor live in either Grays Harbor County or Northern Pacific County, that is north of Willapaw Bay. We spend all of our money locally. Very seldom do we go out of town. Another thing, since the department receives money from the general fund, we the commercial fishermen are providing fish for the public that does not fish. I think that we should be able to continue public fish for the public. We have a group of people that wants to include our commercial fish in with the tribal commercial fish, which should not happen. Our part is part of the 50% in whatever the Quinaults and the Chehalis tribe catch has nothing to do with the non, with the rest of the non-treaty. And the last thing is something needs to be addressed about the seals and the sea lions. They're taking way more than their fair share of the fish. And I think that's about it. Oh, I also agree with Dave about the chart that was just handed out. It needs to be worked on very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just want to caution you, retired guy right here.
And loving it.
Hi, my name is Francis Estalila, and thank you for the time. I've been in the process for a long time, a decade or more, along with Alan. So we've been working side by side on these issues for a long, long time. We're slowly making some headway, but we got a long ways to go. And I would just echo some of the things that that we on both sides of the aisle have agreement on. Conservation does come first. We want to use sound science, just as Alan said. We want to have separation between the humped tulips and the Chehalis basins. They behave differently. The needs are different. They're managed totally differently in terms of hatchery inputs and versus wild inputs to the gravel. They need to be managed separately. And I would echo what they said about the tiers. This presentation, although it, just in the formative stages, we're presenting this as small run, large run, as if there's two tiers. Alan's suggesting perhaps a dozen or more tiers. I think somewhere in the middle is good. I think the original tier plan we have with four tiers, if you really break that down, the four tiers comes down to unharvestable, conservation concern, tier one, red alarm, red alert. You know, this is proceed with caution, lay low, tread lightly. Tier two, barely harvestable, small run. Maybe take a few bites of it here and there. Directed harvest, maybe. But use most of it for impact to access other harvestable stocks. Tier three, harvestable. Let's go get them. We got a healthy run. Let's everybody have a chance. The rationale in the original tier plan was that at the top of the tier three, good healthy run size, there'd be equal sharing of that bounty between the recreational side and our commercial colleagues. And then tier four, gangbuster run. Gangbuster run. We cannot catch it on the sport side. You can give us the whole 7 days a week, a two fish bag, we can't get them all. Okay? We'd share those gladly. Have these guys mop up behind us and take all that excess. Unfortunately, we have not seen that kind of run size. And the reason is our conservation objectives are not being met. So I'd like to talk about conservation just briefly. We have these escapement goals that we've talked about. The escapement goal is for natural origin spawners, not just all the fish that make it onto the gravel. You saw some of those slides where a large portion of the escapement is in fact hatchery fish, particularly in the humped tulips for coho, have a really tough time meeting the management objective for natural origin coho on the gravel. The Chinook slide for Chehalis was a little, it didn't paint the accurate picture because, again, that's reflecting all escapement onto the gravel, and some of those fish are hatchery fish, which we're supposed to be managing for a natural origin, wild gravel-borne fish back to the gravel. And we are not doing that for Chehalis Chinook. In fact, I would say 4 out of 5 times over the past 15 years, we don't make it. Why don't we make it? We have run sizes that could allow us to make those, but we over-harvest. The only thing standing between those fish coming across the bar at Westport and getting to the gravel is a bunch of hooks and a bunch of nets. And we're not being intellectually honest with the fishing power of either of those fleets. I can tell you right now, when we set out and have a directed Chinook fishery in Marine Area 2-2, we are harvesting those fish at a rate of 3.5 times to 4 times what the model predicts. That's just intellectual honesty. We keep saying, why isn't that reflected in the model? We hear the model is a 20-year rolling average. Well, are we going to wait 20 years for the model to catch up with what we can do today? Or are we going to use the real-time information that we have available to us now to make the right decisions to ensure the conservation goal is met? The same thing happens on the commercial side. You know, we have paper mortalities that we assign to these fisheries. You know, that's, where's the truth? Is it 45%? Is it 25%? Is it 14%? It might be. The truth is somewhere in there. I don't know what it is, but that's the first capture. We line up 20 boats in a narrow corridor from the top of 2D to the top of 2A. And when you release a fish back into the water, it's going to swim right into the next net to be subjected to the same level of stress and mortality. Well, is it dead the first time around? Maybe not, but how about the second, the third, the fourth? Those released fish on a full fleet opener in 2A, 2D in a narrow corridor, very few of those released fish are making it past the lakeside deadline up at the top of 2A. If they're not being recaptured in the net, they're dying from the stress, or they're being eaten by a sea lion or a seal that's patrolling the area. I know this year, one of the boats with an observer on board had two sea lions following it. The entire time they're out there, and I would dare say every fish released was probably eaten by those sea lions. So it's a really tough situation to try to conduct a selective fishery. The idea with a selective fishery is to let the non-target stock get by unharmed so it can spawn. And we may say it on paper, we may have it in our procedures, but what we do in practice does not allow it to happen. Okay. Lastly, I would like to make a comment about extracting maximum socioeconomic value out of this fishery. It's a limited, precious natural resource, and all of us want a piece of it, okay? I would just say we have 20 to 30 active boats on the commercial side fishing these fish. For an average landing of $92,000, I saw on that slide, we spent $250,000 to manage this fishery. Where's the value? Where is the value? I'm a recreational fisherman. I'm not a retiree, but when I go fishing, I go fishing. I set my week. I planned ahead. I planned ahead this week, this year. But I got shut out because we got shut down in Marine Area 2-2. I lost my week. I lost a week of revenue in the office. I lost a full day of surgery. I lost people coming from out of state to come join me in what I like to do. It's the highlight of my year, and I missed out on it. I spent $1,000 every season on nothing but bait and gas. One guy. Your full fleet generates $92,000 to be managed with $250,000. It just doesn't make sense. So I think you need to look at the greater good of how you're going to get maximum socioeconomic value out of this fishery. I'll make one more comment about the commercial split. Before the fish cross the bar, 3/4 of the harvest on Chinook has already taken place. A lot of it largely commercial. You've got a basin that's managed before the state sets one hook or one net. It's already 58% commercial of what's coming back. The public is being fed. The public is being fed. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? I think you all did a terrific job presenting. Mr. Hamilton, you want a last remark before we get to open public?
We're talking rec. You keep hearing the word rec and commercial. Okay, and I'd like to phrase it one. There's one more leg to this two-legged stool, and it's the great unseen one that nobody likes to talk about. The vast majority of the harvest in the Chehalis Basin comes, what we call, for all practical purposes, Aberdeen Hokan. Okay, the marine. The vast majority of the jobs lost, the cost borne, everything else has gone to help restore fisheries, which is kind of a misnaming of something because they don't intend to let one more pass the bridge. But the inland communities have borne all the cost of everything it comes out, from jobs to mills to farms to volunteerism. And in the end, all the benefit is being taken from all that money, all that at Aberdeen Hokum, which is at the start of the river. It, it you can go up a couple, about 4 miles more. It's near Montesano. That's Friends Landing. That's where the last tribal net is, okay? And that benefit is all taken there. The people that have borne all the cost and continue to do so receive almost zero benefit out of it. And that conflict is huge. And it's the unsaid one that we all deal with. And it needs to be addressed openly by this commission and understood. Second largest watershed of the state, you can't ask those communities to bear all the cost and get none of the benefit, and the fish get none of the benefit. That is not a correct policy.
Thank you. Thank you for preparing your remarks and delivering them so well. I think we learned a lot from what you've had to say. And now we're going to ask for public testimony. I've got a number of people who've signed up. Commissioner Smith has a question.
In addition to the expert testimony, thank you for your passion.
Yeah.
I mean, that all of you speak from the heart, and that, you know, it resonates well, and you did it very eloquently as well.
Yes.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, now we're back to the three-minute rule. As I call you up, keep in mind you speak into the microphone, but not too close. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude. If you're in mid-sentence, it doesn't mean you have another minute or two, so please wrap it up. The first two members of the public, Randy Boynton and Leroy Wisner, would you both come forward?
I'll pass. I'm Randy Boynton.
Oh, okay. Then Jerry Lowe, would you come forward? Okay, Mr. Wisner. Mr. Wisner first.
Good morning, Madam Chairman Wicker and the rest of you, Commissioner and Phil. I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you today with my opinion. My name is Leroy Wisner. I'm a member of both VFW Grays Harbor Chehalis Basin and the Willapa Basin from their inception. And I'm an active member of PSA and CCA and PL Sportsman Club. I live in Chehalis, which puts me on the upper end of this basin. And I see things up there that the rest of the people in the lower basin haven't got a clue of what's going on. And for one, after the 2007 flood, we have lots of muddy water. I was down there the other day trying to coho fish. There is so much spawning water for Chinook there that you can't believe. All of that mud's gone, and there is gravel like you imagine, can't imagine. So we have the opportunity. We just need to put the fish up there. At my, what I'm going to talk about today is to, I want to address that we as an advisors, we need to be sure that the department's salmon preseason forecast, primarily Chinook, is as accurate as possible. It seems that once these forecasts are put on paper, they're also etched in stone. And we as advisors, we're looked at like, ooh, well, we can't even question those numbers. And these accurate forecasts are as critical in developing escapement for the fish back to the gravel in the hatchery, and then being to fairly allocate these fish resources to both the recreational and the commercial fleets. At my first meeting as a Grays Harbor advisor, I asked, how do you arrive at these forecast numbers? The department later brought in a biologist and gave us a video on how they counted steelhead reds. And that's about it. You know, there was nothing as to explaining the whole process. Okay, I know there are a lot of ingredients that goes into that. You know, it entails, you know, the stream count reds, you know, and more than likely the out downstream smolt migration, if they put the trap in, could include jack counts, however they're going to count them, with a minimal number of hatcheries up the river. And I have heard at times that they don't also count the commercial take-up on the west coast of Vancouver Island, and I somewhere thought that there may be some of the commercial Washington fleet in Washington coast. Okay, what I want to put across to you is that all this information needs to be in one location, and it needs to be something that the Department of Fish and Wildlife uses. It needs to be a document that we can also use as advisors. And I hope that today you might listen to my plea and help enforce that. Thank you. You have any questions?
Thank you. Lauren G. Mr. Lowe.
Madam Chairman, Director, gentlemen, my name is Jerry Lau. I've had a sport fishing license in Washington State for over 50 years. I've been a licensed guide in Westport, and I'm a commercial fisherman. I have lived in the same house in Aberdeen for over 40 years, and Grays Harbor is my home. I'm deeply concerned with the salmon fishing management there. And I would like to reiterate that the main challenge that we have in managing the fishery in Grays Harbor is conservation. I think we're all unanimous in that perspective. To preserve and protect the Chinook salmon resource primarily. We seem to have plenty of coho. We have probably plenty of wild coho. But the Chinook salmon is the one that we need to be careful with and manage for. My suggestions, I'd like to stop just a second. I had some handouts for you. Do you have them?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Do you have them there?
We don't have them in front. We usually wait till the end to circulate them because we don't have time to listen to you and to...
All right. So. All right. I get that. So my first suggestion would be a uniform size restriction. And for the sports fishermen, we use 24 inches. For the commercial fishermen in the ocean, it's 28 inches. That's where we start in the marine areas. Is this part of the recreational priority? I mean, why can't we determine what is an undersized salmon? What's a little one? What's a baby? Why wouldn't it be uniform, whatever it is? And the last thing I'm suggesting is that you lower the 28 inches down to the 24. I'd like to see you make it all 28 uniform, minimum size restriction. The next thing is management in Grays Harbor. We need to limit motors in our tributaries. This is where we disturb the Chinook that are coming up and up into the spawning areas. This is not a new concept or something that's new. Oregon does this, I think, uniformly. But I know in estuaries where they have a management problem, that's the first thing to go. Limit motors to tidewater only, particularly jet in the Grays Harbor. The big problem is these jets that go up the Satsup and the Wainuchi. They tear right up through the salmon. They're there today fishing coho, and meanwhile the Chinook are trying to spawn. They're going right over the gravel beds and the reds. Next thing would be new recreational boundaries. There are no boundaries. The recreational fishery goes clear up into the upper tributaries. The spawning gravel that previous gentleman was talking about, they're walking around on that. We keep them out of there until we get these Chinook back to adequate numbers. Possibly bait restrictions. Bait is, we have a higher mortality when we use bait. That's another thought. These policies would also enhance and expand the recreational opportunities for more sportsmen by imposing seasonal limits on these guys. We've got some sports fishermen that are all day, every day fishermen. Some of them this year have literally over 100 Chinook. This is part of individual is caught.
this is part of this recreational priority, which in itself is not a bad concept, but it's being way overly abused. Some of these guys fish with this recreational priority are fishing every day. There needs to be a limit on how many fish an individual person can take and get them off the fishing grounds, out of the tributaries, the streams, and the good spots to fish, and let more fishermen, particularly sports fishermen, into these areas where they can catch a fish too.
Thank you. Thank you. Your time is up.
I didn't hear the beeper.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Keep the beeper going a little bit longer, because it was a little while ago.
No.
William Kersey? Okay, Mr. G? G or G?
G. From Olympia. The only issue that I've got that hasn't been talked about already today is the way that the department handles the implementation of their plan. I'm not real familiar with the Grace Harbor plan, but I've been thoroughly through the Willapaw. And as an example of that, we knew from landings early on that the escapement goals down there weren't even going to be met. There wasn't a chance. And yet, the department did absolutely nothing about that. Now, unless those kind of situations are changed, the way the department implements the plan, this new management plan isn't going to mean a thing. So I think you need to look very, very carefully at how we're going to implement these things, because if we don't have a quota or some kind of in-season adjustment, and I don't care what the quota is. I don't care if you want to call it 50-50 rec commercial of what's left after the Indian share or how you want to do it. But however you do it, when you set the quota, then let's manage for that. The way that happened in the Willapaw was you set a season for the commercials. Well, we can't change that. Why not? You tell me. Why can't you change it? Why wasn't it changed? Why did we overfish in the Willapaw this year? Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Rao, would you come forward? Mr. Kersey?
Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the Commission. Also, Director
Anderson.
My name is William Kears. I'm a resident of Elma. And I'm here. I'll just try and speak up. I'm here as a citizen first and foremost, and as a conservationist on the second level. And as has been said many times already, I think the most important issue that we need to confront here is conservation. And I think that one way that we can achieve that better moving forward is to establish a working that can come later maybe, but some sort of framework for in-season management. I'd like to echo that. Second, I think that while this is obviously an emotional topic for a lot of us, you've seen a lot of emotion expressed this morning, and I can appreciate that as much as anybody, sometimes I've been known to wear my heart on my sleeve, but I think, if I may, I'd like to interject that maybe it's time in this process for us to look past the emotions on both sides and take a good, honest look at data, the best science that we have available, and also, as Dr. Estalila said earlier, I think we need to focus on the socioeconomic benefit the greater socioeconomic benefit to the community as a whole. As someone who lives in Grace Harbor, I see a lot. I've seen a lot more people fishing from out of the area lately, and I think that while on one side I think that's negative sometimes because I wish it wasn't crowded, but on the other hand, I see that's a tremendous opportunity for our community. And I think that we need to do what we can to take full advantage of the opportunity it presents when folks from Puget Sound and areas like that come down our way to go fishing. And we need to make sure there are plenty of fish there for them to catch so they'll keep coming back. And I guess those are my main points.
Thank you. Melanie Rabaglia? Okay, Mr. Rapp?
I spoke yesterday, but 3 minutes isn't a really long time to get all our points across. I'd like to strongly echo the person that spoke before the last person about the Willapa Bay in season management or lack of. It was quite obvious that that run was being mishandled and needed to be shut down. We have a policy out in the marine area that directly affects Grays Harbor, where when the Chinook quota isn't met in the marine area by a certain point, it seems that it's just a good thing to increase the limit on kings to two because they haven't caught those fish yet. And obviously, at that point, we're looking at a lack of accuracy in the projection, and the run is suffering if those fish aren't being caught because the effort is certainly there. And at that point, we're going to tell people, oh, well, you can keep two instead of one because you're not going to get your fair share. Well, obviously, their fair share isn't there. And that seems to be a recurring issue, is that when projected runs aren't making that, we need to adjust those runs. The other thing I'd like to bring up before my time is up is that we can talk about percentages between commercial and recreational and who should get what share. But the bottom line is that the freshwater area people are being taken advantage of when nets are in for 5 days at a time, and then they get a day or two off, and then nets go back in. The netting schedules this year prevented fishing opportunities from being taken by many, many people upstream. As I said yesterday, the counts of cars in the parking lots at the launches were down by a factor of 75% this year. That's all money that directly impacts Grays Harbor and tourism dollars, both on gas, bait, and especially fishing gear. How many fishing rods didn't get bought by people this year because they didn't even bother because their neighbors told them there aren't any fish in the river to be had because the nets took them all? As Francis said, we've got a bottom line on how much money the commercial people bring into Grays Harbor, and it just doesn't even hold a candle to what it holds for recreational anglers, especially the upriver people, as was told in Chehalis, that aren't seeing any fish anymore. We can all struggle for the fish around Montesano, and we may not catch 80% of the fish that we caught last year or the year before, but those people are getting nothing, and that's just plain wrong. I think that this commission really needs to look at what its roles really are for the general population and not just for a few people. The Quinault take more than enough fish to feed the people in supermarkets and restaurants and areas. That's been adequately displayed. The amount of fish caught offshore is just astronomical for those needs. How many of these fish are being documented as going to Grays Harbor? How many of the fish buyers that they're selling to are willing to tell us whether the fish are being used for human consumption or not? After a certain point, a lot of this stuff goes for cat food, and that's a sin. That's all I've got to say.
Thank you. Heath Heikala.
Hi, my name is Melanie Rabaglia, and I live in Elma. I'm a recreational fisher person who's been doing this fishery for about 5 years when I discovered one of my neighbors with a big fish. And I realized that this was a local treasure, a local community thing that happens every year, and I wanted to be involved. I started to get more involved in this and the Chehalis River Basin Task Force and volunteering my time for that. One of the things that I notice, and we all start to talk about, is this management complexity. You know, we've got the Quinault, we've got the Chehalis, and we've got the commercial folks, and we've got the recreational, which are the last on the list, which I noticed. I can't do anything about the Quinault and the Chehalis. They're the tribe. They get whatever they want. So whatever we're left with, that's what we're left with. So now we're between the commercial and the recreational. The gillnetters sit here and they tell me, they make the case for me. They made a comment a couple of weeks ago about it's not worth it if they only get 10 fish. You know what I would do if I could get 10 fish in one season? Last year, I took in 8 beautiful salmon, and that was it. This year, I got 3. It's better to fish in a lake where I get trout. This is crazy. He provides fish for public sold in markets. The Quinaults sell the fish. Everybody sells the fish sold in the public markets. I don't need their 20 to 30 fishers to kill all of the fish to take away this community resource. We want to talk about conservation. The major thing to talk about conservation, curtail all commercial fisheries. It just doesn't make sense. The numbers don't add up. I hear somebody catches 100 fish, and that's the, you know, that's all he ever does. He's the odd man out. The person who says that most of us are weekend fishermen, we are. I get 4 days a week to work. I get 3 days a week to fish. I'm not fishing today because I'd rather spend my time and talk to you and explain to you where I'm coming from. This is all I eat, is fish and vegetables. I try to grow what I can. I try to catch what I can. I go and I buy from Willapa Bay guys who sell me crab. I mean, I try to help my local fishery. I would buy salmon here locally if I couldn't catch it locally. But it goes back to, these are the same guys who want to shut me out. You see these numbers from the proposed sharing proposals that got put up? They were crazy. I mean, the bottom line is that the rec guys were willing to be reasonable when I saw the numbers start to come through, and the commercial guys don't. They want it all. I mean, and how much impact can I make with my little hook and fish? You know, maybe he bites, maybe he doesn't. They throw a net in and they catch all of these fish, and they're going to complain once again. I get 10 fish, it's not worth it. If it's not worth it, stop fishing. 10 fish for me is way worth it. Give us a chance. Give the people further up the river a chance. My husband and I go out in a canoe. We've seen people out in inflatable rafts with their cats. I mean, this is a great, fun fishery, and the commercial guys are going to take it away. Don't let that happen. Please don't let that happen.
Thank you. Mr. Heikla.
Yeah, I didn't plan on testifying on this. I thought I would, and at the start, if I had to actually eat what I could on fish, I'd be in big trouble right now. So anyways, I was talking with Jim Scott this morning saying, great, you guys are kicking off another policy development process like you don't already have enough to do. So I don't envy the staff or you guys for doing it, but I think it's important to do. About 2 years ago, we were going through the budget process for WDFW and talking about license fee increases. There were cut proposals that were sent up to the legislature. I hearken back to that because one of the things that was put on that list for potential cuts was the Grays Harbor commercial fishery because of some of the economic values that Francis mentioned. And I don't have the recreational numbers, so I'll say that, you know, from the beginning. But I think it definitely, someone said it, as you guys do move forward with your policy development, I think it's important to look at these numbers because this was provided to the legislature a year and a half ago or so. You spend over, and this is just for the commercial side, about $215,000 for the hatchery production for what is harvested on the commercial side, about $30,000 in department management costs, staff and so forth to manage the fishery, about $10,000 in enforcement, and that comes out to, as Francis mentioned, about $250,000, $250,000-odd. Your ex-vessel value, anywhere between 80 and 90. They had adjusted to today's dollars, which is going to make it look bigger at 90-something, but about $80,000, $85,000 a year. And your revenue back to the state in the form of license fees and excise tax revenue comes out to approximately $35,000. It's hard to figure out because of that split between Grays Harbor and Columbia River permit, but it's in that neighborhood. So basically, you're spending $7 in money to get $1 back to the state in the form of that revenue side of things, and then you're spending $3 for every one for the excise value. So, hey, that may be perfectly appropriate. I've seen worse boondoggles, and there's a lot of money spent on certain things, but not to call that a boondoggle, but I think it's appropriate to look at the policy of it and consider that. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the public input on this item. So, Ron, would you like to come back? I thought maybe a useful thing to do would be to put back that slide that shows the common themes that you've heard that you think are the ones that we should focus on. Yeah, the key policy issues. And maybe we can just stay at this higher tier level of feedback. At some point in time, I do want to see the commission really grapple with some of the details and really answer all of your questions. But I think I heard staff indicate that what you'd like is a higher level of feedback and these key policy issues, I think, direct us towards that higher level. Okay. So I'll lead this off, but if anyone wants to chime in with questions or comments, feel free. I heard repeatedly a common concern over conservation. So I think what we need to understand is our track record. You know, we've heard over the years concern repeatedly that we're not making our escapement. And particularly in relation to the component that is natural spawning. I know it's complicated. Sometimes hatchery fish are counted in escapement, I understand, but so we need a good sense of, have we been meeting our escapement, and if not, why not, for the various stocks that we're considering here. I think this commission, from what I've seen in past policy development processes, I think we are committed to conservation as our highest priority. That's what it says in the back of our nameplate, sound stewardship of fish and wildlife. That's our mandate. So kind of a no-brainer that we have to start there, I think. Does anyone have any other feedback to staff? Commissioner Kinney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to reiterate that we heard from the public, we heard from the panel, you know, that conservation, I mean, that's the key issue. We heard about, you know, in-season management. Why can't that be done? Why do we have to set a season and then not adjust? And it seems like these discussions sometimes focus on the split, the sharing, when I think what the commission really wants to get at is the conservation side of it first. There's always going to be people on both sides of the sharing issue. And I hate it to come down to at the very end where we just take the two numbers that both groups recommended and say, well, what's the difference between them? You know, that seems ridiculous. It seems like we need to get to what some of the good comments that were made here today by both sides and say, you know, what are those conservation issues that have to be done to make sure the numbers and the escapements are met? What has to be changed? What's, you know, nothing should be in stone that we can't adjust if that's needed. And get to what's fair, as well as consider the economics of it. You know, I know we're charged to do both. Look at the conservation as well as the economics of the people that are using these resources. So I just would really like to see in the future meetings, as you know, more of the information based on those economic sides of things, the, you know, what can be done from a conservation standpoint and what can be changed, what needs to be adjusted. That would be really helpful, I think, as a commissioner.
Okay. I thought we might just go through each item. If you have any comments on conservation, I think we're all, nobody's disagreeing with me here. Conservation comes first. We need to understand why we have not been making our escapement, how we do turn that situation around so that we can on a consistent basis. Yes.
I'm sorry. I would like, I'm kind of a new commissioner here, and I had some questions, kind of more background in terms of kind of this, the policy. Why are we here today? In terms of, you know, there looks like there was a policy in place, and get the department's perspective as far as how that policy was developed initially, why it's broken, or why the department feels it's broken, and why is the department coming to the commission now? So I was wondering if I could.
Right now, you want an answer to that?
Well, yeah, at least at some point, maybe not right now, but I think those are all very important questions that, at least from my perspective. And I will say, too, if I could comment, you know, I've been involved in the North of Falcon process since 1997, and of course, Puget Sound, and it's I see some of the faces that I've seen at those meetings, but we're always kind of split up. The Grays Harbor Willapaw guys, they say, well, you've got your problems and Puget Sound. So this is very helpful to me to kind of get a better understanding of Grays Harbor kind of the management challenges that are presented. It sounds like from the presentations, you've got very knowledgeable people, people that know a lot more about this system than anybody here in this panel. And it sounds like there are some common understandings, and I assume there were some common understandings when this management policy was put into place. I mean, I would strongly encourage people to work together and come up and narrow your differences. I realize that, and I believe me, I've been involved in allocation battles, and they are very, very difficult issues for the department to deal with and with this commission. So, and my other word of caution to people is you're better off in coming up with your own solutions rather than to hand it off to somebody else, because you don't know what the outcome will be. And so maybe those are some of the comments that I'd like to make. So thank you.
Director Anderson, do you want to, you're reaching for your mic.
Well, if you would like me to try to put some of this in sure. context a little bit, I'd be happy to give that a go.
Okay.
Well, just let's start back with about 1996. That's when the commission, through the initiative, got the authority for policymaking in the fisheries side of the department. Of course, the Department of Wildlife and Department of Fisheries were merged in effective January 1994. Following that, then came the piece with the commission's authority for policymaking, among other things, on with fisheries. In 1997, we brought our first North of Falcon policy to the commission, and it had a. It was fairly general in nature. I think it was one page, if I recall, and it didn't address specific geographic areas like Puget Sound or Grays Harbor or Willapaw or the Columbia River. It was more of an overarching principle statement of policy. And over the years, over the next 8 to 10 years or so, as that policy was updated and refined, it became more specific. And that policy, as it pertained to Puget Sound, expressly said that there's a recreational priority for Chinook and Coho salmon in Puget Sound, as an example of some more specificity in the policy than what it was originally. There's the guiding principles from a conservation piece that are right up front. There's a piece associated with ensuring that we're consistent with U.S. v. Washington, U.S. v. Oregon, some of those types of things. But then it got into some more specifics about specific watersheds and some guidance in terms of sharing of the harvestable surplus of the state share by geographic area. Another thing that went on, an in-season management section was added at some point in time, as well as the sampling and monitoring piece. So it began to mature over time. At some point in there was a Grays Harbor piece added, there was a Willapaw Bay piece added, and they were very general. They were general in nature. Provide meaningful opportunity for recreational and commercial fisheries. I don't know if that's the exact wording, but it was pretty general. With respect to both Willapaw and Grays Harbor, but because we're talking about Grays Harbor here today, as was indicated by some of the testimony from folks that have been around the harbor for many, many years, the nature of the fishery changed, certainly with the Bolt decision, changed in a significant way. And the growth in the recreational fishery has, of course, occurred across the state, and Grace Harbor's been no exception. There's been a huge growth in the recreational fishery in Grace Harbor, I think both in the freshwater area as well as the estuary area. I think the estuary area in particular grew at a rapid rate in the last, I'll say, decade or so. The pressures of how the resource was divided up on the state side between the various sectors increased, and in response to that, we put together an advisory group and built this tiered system that you've heard referenced, which was not a policy.
Okay.
And it was because we everybody could readily see that there was increasing pressures on the resource. We were having difficulty meeting conservation objectives, particularly for Chehalis Falls Chinook and Spring Chinook, but the fishery implications on Falls Chinook. And so we got together a group of really great folks and developed this tiered system to try to express our principles and policies relative to fisheries when the run sizes were low, and then, as I think Francis explained, the four different tiers, I think, was a pretty good encapsulation of what the underlying basis for those four tiers are. At one point in time, could have been 2007, when we came to the commission with a North of Falcon policy, under the Grace Harbor management category, we said manage the fishery consistent with the Grace Harbor, the draft Grace Harbor management plan, or whatever I'm not sure that's what we called it. And I remember Commissioner Mankin saying, well, that might be all well and good, but I haven't seen that plan, and so before I'm going to be willing to put that into an agency policy that the commission adopts, I need to know more about that. And understanding certainly that it is under the commission's purview to set policy when it pertains to allocation. As this has matured, admittedly slowly over time, we have came to the point where, rather than bringing a management plan, we instead, following on the example of what was done in the Columbia River, we instead thought it was more appropriate to bring a policy, a draft policy, and work through the type of process, public process, that has been explained here today, with the goal of having the commission adopt a policy. Some of the things that we're talking about are getting into things that aren't really policy, not that they're bad things to understand and talk about. That's a little bit of the background, Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
That we really don't have a policy other than the really short two-sentence piece that's in the North Falcon policy. Given all the really significant issues that are involved with the management of Grace Harbor salmon stocks, we thought the time was ripe. We thought the time was now for the commission to develop a policy for management of the fisheries in this watershed. And so want to make sure that folks have a chance to take, because this is the draft policy, that between now and December, when we would come back to you to make sure you take a good look at this, you'll see there's an adaptive management section in there, along with the general policy statement and the guiding principles. And then there are the pieces relative to allocation. And I think it's fair. It's a fair representation that the allocation pieces that are in here mirror what was in Ron's presentation today. And I think you heard pretty clearly from those that are involved in the process up to this point in time that they don't want to be locked in to those at this point in the process, but it might be something that the commission will want to do before they send it out for public review, because at that point in time, I think you are going to need kind of the shape of the table and the options that you're going to be asking for the public to comment on. So that's kind of a summary of kind of where I think we are and what we're hoping, how we would hope to move forward.
Commissioner Keogh?
Yeah, thank you very much, Director Anderson. I mean, I think that's very important to lay out kind of where we are in the process, particularly for commissioners that are new. Like I say, I've been around the North Falcon process, and I've heard particularly this year about real management challenges on Grace Harbor, but I think that's very helpful to put everything into context. And thank you, Madam Chair, for indulging me for that opportunity.
Okay. Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chairman. I have some general comments I'd like to make, and they don't necessarily fit in the key policy issues. You know, this is the Commission's first real exposure to the management of Grace Harbor. Yes, we hear bits and pieces and annually receive testimony from many of you, but not in a really quantified, focused way. And I've heard some quality comments today from both sides. Our mission today was to give some guidance or some sideboards, and it's a little bit tough with the first exposure, but I've written down several things that thoughts occurred to me. And let me start by offering my appreciation to Ron for initiating this, for your presentation today. I support the process you've started. I like how you've gone to the community. There's already been three meetings. You have good representation. You put together a panel. I mean, it's communications and bringing people together, looking at their needs, that ultimately will end up with a policy. So there has been a good exchange of information, and I'd like that to continue. I emphasize the views from everyone on conservation. I appreciate hearing everyone agreeing to that. We need to finish, and I have read, by the way, this document that the director was referring to, and this is the first cut of Grays Harbor Basin Salmon Management Policy, and these, it's called concepts, but frankly, I think with the exception of the quota portion, this is very well drafted, and with a little tightening up, I think you've done an excellent job, and so if we could finish the first three pages and leave the quota discussions, that would be very helpful. On page 12 of your presentation, something caught my eye. It was a 12-year average of coho and chum between treaty and non-treaty fishers, and it stood out over 12 years that the tribal overharvest was noteworthy. And I think that it requires tightening our management, but it also is tied specifically to the issue of individual versus aggregated escapement goals. And I'd urge the department and any of you that are involved in North of Falcon to push the PSC to move that direction. I like the key policy issues. I would have added one because when I first looked at this list, it came down to sharing, and the first thing that went in my mind was sharing of information, sharing of data. That's sharing of fish. So I think you actually need to add one because sharing of data is critical, fundamental to where we go and what we do in this decision. Next, I this is a personal thing. I'd like to better understand the Chehalis court decision, and I want a foundation of why that came about, you know, where what the state did after the decision, so I can understand it better. It seems so inconsistent with the aggregated USV Washington tribes and their up to 50% allocation to suddenly out of the non-treaty share give a portion. That's a court decision, but I'd like to know that better. The I share that view that I think both sides indicated, and that's the sharing of the graphs, but only as a starting point. And that's consistent with most beginning scopings, whether it's an ESA scoping or whatever, is you don't immediately start and you narrow down, but not it's your first look. So I agree with what you've said at that point. I heard several of you say that we ought to look at this tier system, whether we have enough tiers. And I think it's worthwhile. I'd like to hear more. Would that be helpful if we had additional tiers? Because I heard it from both sectors. And can you both parties speak on the same issue? I listen very closely. So I probably have more, but those are the ones that flash in my mind. We're going to see you again in December. We're going to take this document. We're going to massage it again. At that point, we're going to be a lot smarter than we are in our first look. But you've made us. You've educated at least me a lot, and I appreciate that. And I think that those are my thoughts on how to proceed.
Great. Okay. Any others want to add anything? So we have a few minutes, so I'd like to talk about the transparency issue a little bit, because I think the data sharing falls within that category. That's how I would interpret it. Transparency of decision-making, to me, means that everybody affected understands the basis for decision-making, has access to the data, and feels that they're being addressed honestly, too. And I understand how difficult fisheries management, after being on the commission for 8 years, I understand it's very difficult. It's very complicated. You're dealing with a lot of moving parts. This past season, we were aware that there was a lot of negotiations that took place after North of Falcon, and the various constituents felt left in the dark as the decisions moved around after North of Falcon. So I'd like, as we go forward in this discussion, to have an understanding of maybe some ground rules that we might apply to figure out how we can avoid this moving goalpost kind of feeling that people had. That, to me, is part of the transparency. We can also be pretty honest with people about the limitations, the constraints we face in gaining transparency in our negotiations with the tribes. That's not under our control exclusively, but at least we can explain that we are and show that we are making an effort to improve that side of the transparency issue. So that's about all I had to say on that. Technical rigor, that's a great one. And it really goes to the limitations that we have as in terms of our science and our fisheries management capabilities. It's just not that easy to be very accurate. So I think we've got to continue to strive to improve our technical abilities, but we've got to be pretty honest about their limitations. And I see, I've said this many times, I see the commission process as a way for citizens to look inside, kind of behind the scenes. And we can ask you questions that then you answer, and then everybody else gets a good picture of the technical challenges. So they might have be able to adjust the expectations about accuracy. Monitoring and enforcement, those are have always been big issues for me. I think it's important to have a level playing field, and the bad guys ought to get caught and punished. Simple notion. But so we need to be pretty clear. I think this commission needs to know what our enforcement approach is, what our monitoring approach is, and see if we're satisfied with that. In-season management, yeah, that sounds like it would be a good idea, given our inability to meet escapement in the past. So you're on that. You'll be able to explain to us how that might be done. And the allocation issue, as we've heard, okay, this is a point in which I have to ask Director Anderson, when do we need to give you that, those sideboards? Because the point is that the public cannot comment unless we're fairly definite in what we're asking for advice about. So we do need to narrow down what we're really going to contemplate so you all will have a fair opportunity to comment. So when do we need to be definite?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, at the time that the commission approves a draft document to put out for public review is when we need to be definitive in what those alternatives are so the public has an opportunity to comment on specific alternatives. Our hope is that that will be in December. Okay. Our goal is to have a policy adopted by the commission in February so we can use it in this year's preseason planning process, which begins the first part of March. So the December to January time frame is when we were going to hopefully have a document out for public review, have a public comment period on it. Of course, you'll have some public comment in December, have another opportunity for public comment on that draft in January, and then that would put us in a position to make any kind of tweaks to what was out for public review in December. You could do that in January so that we make sure that there's been public comment on whatever you might consider in your final decision in February.
Okay. So
We need to be pretty definitive in what we're sending out to the public and coming out of the December meeting.
Okay.
So I'm of course hoping that we will have an opportunity to work with the Fish Committee prior to bringing that document to the full commission in December. So we'll want to make sure we have a Fish Committee meeting prior to the December meeting. Maybe, you know, that day before might be sufficient. We'll need to talk about that internally as to whether we might want to have a conference call with the committee prior to that, but we need a little bit of time to sort that out.
Okay. Commissioner Smith?
Thank you. Just an observation that I think should be shared. In almost every decision that we are brought, that was brought forth to us, we hear the economic argument delivered, whether it's how much is a whitetail versus a wolf or an elk versus a wolf or crab. And when we hear the recreational versus the commercial arguments and all, we hear that. We hear the arguments, and we can digest it. And I think we all understand that. But we are not a council of economic advisors. And I think what drives our decision has to be the science and the conservation. And those two, I think, are totally interrelated. We can't approach these issues from a cost-benefit analysis. Even though we're human and we hear that and we understand that, as Miranda said in the back of our science here, the sound stewardship of fish and wildlife, it's the science and the conservation that drives the agenda. So the what we hear from the public aids us greatly in our deliberations, but I would caution not to overdo an economic argument over and over, because that's part of the 3 minutes that probably isn't necessary, that you could use more beneficially from a conservation, a scientist approach and all of that. And I know I'm maybe saying this to people that understand all of this, but it is a frustrating part of sitting up here on all of these issues. We're hit with the economic perspective, and it's we understand that, but we're not management and budget. So I just wanted to throw that one back.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Was that helpful?
It was. And the one thing that we had contemplated, and I believe we were intending to follow through on, is, as you heard, Puget Sound crab and shrimp discussions, staff had provided commissioners notebooks on with information about the resource that you were taking action on, and we will take steps to try to supply our background, as we have with our advisors, and add to that information, such as what Commissioner Schmitten suggested, and to be able to see the ruling from the court on Chehalis, and I'll be able to have further discussion, hopefully, in the Fish Committee meetings and again in December about all of your questions.
Okay, good. Excellent. Thank you all. I think you did do a great job representing your perspectives. We've learned a tremendous amount. I hope you'll come back. Stay tuned. This is going to be a process that takes several months. We want you to all stay involved. Give us your best insights. So come back and see us in December. We'll be narrowing down the sideboards. We're figuring out what definite sideboards we want to include. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Good job.